There's a phrase I read somewhere which states, we are the sum product of our upbringing. I'm not sure if I agree with the narrowness of that statement, but I do believe we, as individuals, only see the world through the eyes we have learned over the years, and that will determine what we think and what we believe. It will affect our political leanings, our wants, our desires, even the sort of people we associate with. Let me explain. I grew up in a rural society before social media, before mobile phones. In fact, the concept of personal computers hadn't been realised yet. No, we weren't backward. We were just different then. Where I lived was a small village with one shop, a telephone box and three pubs, as well as three or four churches of differing denominations. There was a primary and a secondary school, and children came from the surrounding areas to attend. Oft times in the winter, we relied on the local farms for the bulk of our produce, and when the very bad winters snowed us in for weeks on end, we relied on the nearest farmer, Mr. Shaw, to bring in milk and other dairy produce, plus whatever meat he had killed and butchered on a trailer behind his Ferguson tractor. Vegetables became limited to whatever could be lifted from the frozen ground or collected from barn storage. In the summer, we were able to get salad veg for the period they were in season, and wintertime was restricted to cabbage, cauliflower and potatoes, with some carrots, Brussels and swede. It was an almost hand-to-mouth existence by modern-day standards, and the harshness of those times only changed when the village became swallowed up by the spread of a local town and a supermarket appeared. No one was wealthy, and few had many possessions, but by working with the land in our gardens and in our community, we had a good existence. There were the allotments, which added to the choices. And the post office always managed to get sweets for us to drool over and buy small quantities of, when we had the pocket money. It was the era of make do and mend, and toys as well as clothes were repaired, remodelled and rotated. When I look back on the fashions of the time, they were a combination of what was being got rid of by the costume departments of theatres, hand-me-downs from mums and dads, older brothers, sisters, cousins and people over the road, as well as from the houses that had been destroyed and owners killed during the war years, which had happened some 15 years previously. Nifty mothers who had skills with a pattern would unpick an old dress they found at a jumble sale and use the material to make children's dresses for the summer or trousers for their sons for school. Cars were invariably being tinkered with on the drives over the weekend, so they lasted longer, and gardens were kept green and productive. No, we didn't have kiwi fruits or melons. We didn't have salad leaf selections, tomatoes all year round, or small portions of fruit pre-prepared in plastic containers. And we didn't have many of the imported green vegetables we can get today. But we ate well, and we respected the land because it gave us that food. You could say we were still close enough to that mud to know its value. What I'm trying to get at is this. Because we live so close to the earth on which we stand each day and understand that without it we wouldn't survive, we held it in high respect. We also regarded those that tended the land with a higher level of respect than, say, a politician who sat in an office somewhere, signing off bits of paper and dictating what the country should do next. When at university, I studied the science of ecology, so again was surrounded by those who understood the earth and all its vagaries. I was cocooned in the belief everyone thought the same as me. It wasn't until I got a lot older I realised people who had grown up in town or city environments were very different from me. They thought differently. viewed the world differently. I didn't understand them at all. They had invariably only known the streets where they lived, the factories which surrounded them, and everyone they knew worked in them. They expected to go there too when they were old enough and had ceased to notice the continual noises that came from the machinery in those factories, which successfully drowned out sounds of nature. They would have had a very different experience of the earth on which they stood. They didn't have the same connection to where their food came from as we did, and didn't grasp the link between mud and the soil in which the plants and animals grazed, as we saw it, every day. As far as they were concerned, they got food off the market each week and moaned when what they wanted wasn't there. Chances are, none of them had seen fields of grain or cows grazing in a field. None had heard the squealing of the pigs, experienced the smell of the sty and the spreading of that muck each year. Mud was just that mucky stuff which splashed up you when the roads were wet, or the mud on derelict land where you had fun playing on and got shouted at by your mum because you were filthy again. To them, it was just mud, not soil. Now we have global TV, instant researchability on the internet, social media to keep us in touch, and a myriad of gadgets and technology to entertain us and consume us. Children know how to zoom on a screen before they can write. They can gaze, and their attention is held by the flickering videos on a phone, and they walk about with it as if it's an extension bolted to their wrists. It's normal to see people out with earbuds, listening to their own creation of the world, and for friends to get together to sit in each other's company, but to face their phone and text chat rather than talk. Children are not necessarily hearing the sounds of nature anymore because they've been trained to respond to a phone, a tablet, or an AI headset. Algorithms control what we are fed on social media and amplify our deepening thoughts by repetition and association with those that hold similar views. So, what am I driving at? Our views will be as varied as our upbringings and the environment in which that upbringing happened. Our internal values and morals will have been shaped by those experiences, and we have developed a language, a code of usage, which would reflect that. Trying to marry all these expressions of desire, worry, and need is a difficult one and is sparking off bitter debate in numerous areas. Now there is social media, fake information, memes, and viral videos which can destroy or create a person's life. There is greater hatred because the algorithms will select more news and more info from your choices of viewing, thus polarizing your views even further. And then we have the mud, the soil itself, lost under the torrent of saving this and saving that, feeding him and her, buying desired and wanted but unneeded items, just to be chasing the latest and the greatest. How do we marry these opposing stances and find a middle way through? For me, the fundamental question is, how do we create a situation where everyone is aware of the very stuff we stand on, the soil, and that it is the underpinning of everything on this planet? Ironically, unless we have this, there will be no debate on higher issues such as race, sexuality, and gender. We won't be fighting over bits of the planet so as to call it part of one country or another. There won't be race eradications, murders, theft, or any other crime, because once we lose the soil, the animals and plants become extinct, and with it, the food we eat. As more soil dies, we either rely on manufactured substances to sustain us, made from the detritus left behind from dwindling sources, or we kill the planet altogether and become as Mars has done, a mere reflection of its once rich and possibly diverse surface, alive with water and an atmosphere. But then, does it matter? After all, it won't affect those who are alive right now, will it? No, they can forget this pendulum which is swinging, buy their new phone, new car, the new set of collectible plastic toys for their children, not concern themselves with the mileage on that packet of six apples or how many hormones and antibiotics have been injected into the cheap imported meat they are buying, or the herbicides and pesticides which have been sprayed onto their vegetables and fruit to make them grow. No, they can continue cementing over the gardens in readiness for parking their new car, covering the back in decking or slabs or astroturf so as to reduce the mess, or make a place to sit in around a wood-burning pit and have friends round for a barbecue and drinks, or children to celebrate a birthday. All very laudable, but without awareness. Or is it deafness? They are reducing the natural world further with every brick that's laid, with every concrete pouring tamped down. I was delighted to see a growing interest in growing your own and the resurgence in allotments. People are discovering the taste one gets from growing and picking your own fruit or veg, and how it is far superior to that which is picked weeks before its maturity and held in nitrogen bubbles as it's whisked thousands of miles by air from Chile or Egypt or Canada or wherever trade deals have been made. Some seeds of realization are growing in other industries too, and the recognition consuming and throwing away to get the next latest and greatest is unsustainable. I noticed even the fashion industry is recognizing this and has started to think along more sustainable fashion trends. Apps such as Vinted have sprung up, and a new form of make-do and mend is beginning. This time it seems to be more take and remake. I like this approach. It doesn't beat the customers with a stick. It offers on-trend carrots, and for me, that is the way to go. Mobile phone manufacturers are being told to update their products for longer, and white goods are being produced so they can be serviced, something which has been a long time coming. So when will the on-trend carrot reach the soil itself? When will we realise the tiger cannot be saved if we are busy wrecking the very land on which it survives? That the polar bear will go hungry until it adapts to the new way of fishing as it loses the ice sheets? That countries which are letting their farmers and miners run riot on virginal territory and are now killing the indigenous populations so as to get unfettered access? We are indeed the sum product of the experiences in our lifetime, and we can only observe and comment on what is happening from that worldview. Mine is one of closeness to the earth and the ecology of it, so my eye is biased in that direction. I'm not a stick wielder, an eco-warrior who wants to take down the consumer world. I prefer the carrot approach because I find the way to get people to work with you is to get them seeing the situation from a different perspective, or at least acknowledging the potential in that view. And that will only ever be done face to face, where what we say is accountable, our extreme notions of the other person tempered, and the algorithms which control so much of what we have signed up to read and see on social media platforms are broken. Mud is not mud. It's a life force, our life force. And we are destroying it with such speed. But that's for another discussion and another time. Thank you for listening.